You're listening to
The Classroom Collaborative
podcast with your hosts, Dee Dee Wills,
Ed Rock,
and Adam Peterson.
Here we go.
We're so glad you're here.
Let's get started.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to The Classroom Collaborative podcast with me, Adam Peterson.
Hi, I'm Dee Dee Wills.
And I feel like we're going to say it again. We are finally back. Can we all just like,
it's so sad.
Like let out a whole like collective holy beep. Like,
I know. You know, I think there's not a teacher out there who doesn't understand being in the spin cycle of life, right?
Right.
And we've been in this spin cycle of life.
It's nuts right now. And I'm not even in full time in the classroom, but seeing the stress through Trisha's eyes and her busyness. And then if you're a parent listening to this, you understand the busyness of kids' schedules as well. Like, we're never home. Like we are constantly running to something, which I love. I love being a fan. It's my favorite thing in the world, you know, but it leaves very little time for at home time and downtime and whatnot, which is kind of leading into what we're going to talk about today, piles and piles of homework that kids get when there's not time to do that homework. But how are you?
I'm good. I'm really well. You know, I'm thinking though about, you know, teachers out there who are really struggling with having maybe not as much support staff, being understaffed, not enough teachers, not enough subs. And so one more thing on top of their plate feels like it's just, you know, that expression, the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, that's just one more thing. And so we were going to talk about homework and whether or not that's something that we want to even do with primary grades. But then also for a teacher to gather resources for homework and send them home. And then when they get them back, what do they do with it? All of those things feels like just one more thing. And so we wanted to talk about homework, what we understand best practices to be surrounding homework, and then maybe giving teachers license to let go of some things maybe that they have done historically.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah, we started this conversation, you and I know, with a post that I saw that got a lot of attention from a mutual friend of ours on Instagram that posted something about, I won't quote it because I don't remember, but there's something along the lines of stop sending home homework that you're not going to grade.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of support from both sides of that argument. And I was reading the thread and I don't know how many hits it got, but it was a popular post among the teacher community.
Yeah, it got a lot of attention, right?
It totally did. Yeah. And it got me thinking, like, I mean, we can put it on the table. I completely agree with that statement. I am not a fan of busy work. People that know me know that. I think I've preached that on here before and on my own podcast before. And when I speak, I don't like busy work. It doesn't serve a purpose to me. I also don't like work that is work for the kids to teach themselves, you know, like they shouldn't have to go home and not know how to do it. You know, like it should be practice or review or definitely something you're going to look at as a teacher, right? Like otherwise it is just that busy work.
Right. Yeah. You know, I understand our audience that listens to this podcast, primary teachers, right? K-1-2 teachers typically are the people who are listening in. And so we want to make sure that, you know, we're not really talking about high school teachers, right? They're probably not here. They're probably like two people. Yeah. They just play with babies all day long.
What podcast?
Yeah. Who?
They play with babies.
And so we're really kind of talking about those, you know, those primary teachers.
But I saw it even at that, you know, even with colleagues I have worked with and my own kids, I saw busy work at the primary level. I don't know about you, but I saw it come home. I don't know if you saw it with the perfect son or not, but there was those times where it's just like, as a parent and teacher, I tried to like be supportive, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, what is the point of this? Like, what is going on? You know,
why are we doing this?
So what do we do instead? And I love that you mentioned, sorry to cut you off. I love that you mentioned just one more thing to add to your plate, right? Because there is, if you're prepping stuff to send home every day, or you're having to look at that when it comes back, and it does, it adds another step to your process.
That's a huge process. That's a huge step. Because if you're sending something home, you know, if you're like, well, we're required to, because I've heard that before too, we're required to send things home. So in order to send things home, what I imagine would happen is teachers have to be really thoughtful in the types of things that they send home, right? So am I sending, is this really practice or is this busy work? You know, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, that's one more thing that they're having to plan in the 30 minutes that maybe they have for planning, but they don't because it gets taken away because there's nobody there to cover their class or whatever. They're covering other people's classes. And what research is telling us as educators is that homework really doesn't make much of a difference in what students' abilities or skills turn out to be, right? So assigning homework isn't the thing that makes the difference between the student who achieves, not just assigning, but let's assume students do the homework, right? It's just not going to make much of a difference whether a student achieves or does not.
Right.
And so we wanted to talk about, if you want to send home practice work, there are certain skills that we are looking as teachers and as, you know, learners, as we're looking for automaticity. We want them to be able to have speed and accuracy. And that's usually around, you know, numeral identification, letter identification, sounds, sight words, and operations of adding and subtracting, right? So those are the kinds of things that not once we've learned the process and we understand what it means to add and subtract, you know, I'm not saying send home in November to a kindergarten student 2 plus 2 with the numerals right there, right?
Although there are some students who are asking for that. Like you always said that one kid, like, when do I get homework? When do I get homework?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Like,
you got your whole life full of homework.
Yeah, slow down.
You're okay right now. You know, but, you know, just getting into the way that, you know, students should be learning operations, it shouldn't be with the numeral two, the symbol plus, the numeral two, the symbol, right? So we want to make sure that we're teaching them not in that abstract way. So, you know, you could be sending home subitizing cards instead, right? So,
but I'm glad you mentioned the automaticity of the students as well, but it's also, that brings up such a good point about parents, not only parents being busy, but we have to remember there's a lot of kids in our classrooms whose parents don't know how to help them at home, right? Like I had so many parents who just would look at me and be like, I don't know. Either they have a lack of education themselves or it's something new, right? Like I know when Common Core math came out, that was a big one. Like, what do we send home? Cause this is brand new way of teaching math, right? Like parents didn't know what to do. One of the programs we used in my kindergarten class when I was there, it was our phonics and writing program. There was a lot of specific instruction that went along with it and keywords and phrases. And if I would have just sent home a worksheet or a work page, the parents wouldn't have known what to do regardless of their level of education. It was one of those things that you had to know the program to teach it the way it was supposed to be taught. Right. So it goes kids and parents, I think. And I think that's why it's so important that we're sending home stuff. And listen, I said, I'm not a fan of busy work, but I'm okay with sending stuff home. Right. Like practice and fun and things like that. And that's why I'll tell you what, I'm so glad you introduced me to Edna from Bottle. We had her on here a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
I've been using that nonstop with two of my little boys that I'm working with in my tutoring sessions. And it's amazing because they can both sign in and I can track their progress. And they're going back to automaticity. Their automaticity of math is growing so fast because it's such a fun.
So if you haven't watched that or heard that episode, go back and it's last episode, Bottle, B-O-D-D-L. E-learning is a free, which is crazy how big this is.
I don't know how it's free. Like
I don't either. I mean, because AT&T and I think Google was helping sponsor them, but it's a free online game-like website that students can get on. And it's huge. And as a teacher, you can determine what goes home. So, and you know, how much freedom you give them to play, you know, you set up the parameters, I guess is what I'm so eloquently trying to spit out of my mouth. you set up the parameters so that, you know, you're having them, you know, get the carrot and the skills at the same time.
Yeah,
carrot being the reward. I was going to say the stick because we don't want to talk about the stick, but
carrot on a stick is what I get it. Is that what you're with
going?
Me?
Yeah.
I get it. I'm with you on that one.
But bottle is a great one. But also, you know, Adam and I both love games. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that we wanted to also mention is take a look at your classroom games that you have and figure out which one of those could go home with, right. with students for practice. So, you know, I know Adam has a bunch of game suggestions in his book that he wrote. I know that you have some games that you have on TPT, right?
I do with Kim. Yeah. But also yeah, I love it that you mentioned closets because I know that's where I started. Like I started going through when I transitioned from this, because let's be honest, if you're a new teacher, chances are you're doing what your mentor and your team are doing, right? Like it's just, it's the pattern we fall into. And I was doing the same thing and nothing against my team. I had an amazing kindergarten team that I worked with, but when I first started, I did what my neighbor mentor teacher did. You know, I sent home stuff because that's what she was doing. And as I transitioned to this pattern of purposeful, you know, homework or what I call home play, I first started by looking at my closet. And then now teachers have it, I think, so much easier than I did, 16 years ago, because Dollar Tree wasn't a thing. And like Five Below wasn't a thing. Now you can get games for super cheap. Like off brands of the, you know, the name brand board games that you don't mind sending home because you're not afraid of a piece getting lost. Right. Or it's going to happen inevitably.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
But there are so many just little things like that you can purchase for super cheap or get donations for if you don't have every board game in your closet, that the benefit of that is some kids don't ever get to do that. Right. Like it broke my heart when a kid would come to school and say, I don't know how to play Candyland. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you've never played the easiest game in the world with your family at home, you know?
Can I tell you a funny story? So when
are you gonna say Matt,
I don't even wait for you to answer. I just go ahead and start telling you this funny story. But when the perfect son was in kindergarten, the teacher sent home like this page that was a game, you know, it was like a paper page and you cut it out and had the game pieces in there. Well, at the time we had a dog named Hooper who loved paper. And he literally went into Matt's backpack, pulled it out and shredded it. So I was like, Matt, we're going to have to send a note to the teacher. And I put all the pieces in a baggie. This out like literally the dog ate it. So anyhow, I mean, so those things happen.
So are you saying Harriet and Ozzie are reincarnations of Hooper? Because they did that to teach, play, learn when you first got your
copy. I know they did. They love to shred. But, you know, sending things home that you think, okay, if this comes back in pieces, will there be a part of me that dies a little bit inside, right?
Right.
So you want to make sure you send things home that you're okay with, you know, if it does get eaten by the dog or, you know, somebody gets sick on the bus with it, has happened.
Yep.
It's okay. You know, you're going to let that go. So using some games that you have, I know you and Kim have some games. I have some games.
Yeah.
You can search on TPT for free games. And you know, you can support parents by one, you could have, you know, a couple of parent game nights, which may or may not have anybody who come. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes the ones who need to come can't come because they're working seven jobs, you know, to put food on the table. Or you can record yourself playing the game so that the parents understand how to play it and, you know, what to do at the point of difficulty. Because a student is going to have something that pops up that they don't know what it is. And then how you're going to coach them through that. So, you know, I think there's not a teacher out there now who is not familiar with how to record themselves because of everything we've done.
You know,
they're like, these are things I wish I could forget. But you know, you could record yourself, just set up your phone, you know, prop it between whatever and record you don't have to even show your face, just record your hands doing what it's going to do. And then send that video home as well, as a way for them to, have some support on how to play the game.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the games. Cause I know one of my favorite ones to send home of things that I learned from you was Bump. It's such an easy game.
Yeah.
To send home because it's one sheet that you could laminate so it doesn't get ruined, right? There's so many different variations of this that you could easily differentiate.
Any skill you need to have them learn.
Send home a couple dice and some counters, right? And God knows teachers have a treasure trove of counters laying around their classroom somewhere from every math curriculum that's been sampled, right? So can you explain Bump a little bit for the teachers that aren't and where to find it? Because it is such an easy one to send.
it's such an easy one. So what you'll do is, let's imagine that we are practicing sounds, beginning sounds. So you set up a game board, a single sheet of paper with, I usually try to have 12, 12 landing spots. And on each of those landing spots, you may have, let's say we're doing sounds, you'll have a picture of a kite, a dog on another one, a pancake, right? You're going to think about like maybe 5 or 6 sounds that you want to focus on for that game board. And you'll have things that are really clear, pig. So let's say you're doing P and K and D, and M, you'd have monkey and a moon, right? So you have your letters there. So each spot will have a letter, a picture for the beginning sound, and you'll have 2 spots for each sound. So there'll be one that has a monkey, one that has a moon. There's 2. And one that has a dog and one that has a donut. That's for D, right? So you have 12 pictures where people can land, kids can land. Then you can have a spinner. Spinner is one thing that you can do. The other thing you can do is, if you want to not have a spinner, if you want to not have a spinner, you can have a dice. And then you can have like a key for it. So right. A 1 would equal D, a 2 would equal P, a 3 would equal M, right? So you'd have a key for that. And the way that they play is they roll the dice or spin a spinner, and then they land on a D. They're going to look on the board for something that starts with a D, and they put their marker cube. I use like cereal, different colored cereal that you can stack, you know, so yeah. You have like Honey Nut Cheerios and then the chocolate Cheerios, which by the way are delicious. so I might have the Honey Nut ones. You might have the chocolate ones because they're different colors. So I'm going to put my color on there and then my partner's turn. And the goal is each person starts with 10 counters. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to use up all of your counters first. Whoever uses them all up first is the winner. So I go, you go, I go, you go. If it's your turn and you roll on something or spin on something and I already have one marker on there, you can bump me off and put your marker there. If your marker is already there and you roll again, you can put something on top of it. And now it's like kinging in checkers. You can't get bumped off. So basically that's how you play, but you can play that for any skill. Imagine addition facts, yep. Subtraction facts, 3D shapes, 4D shapes, all of those things. So that's basically how you play bump. You teach them the structure of the game, and then you just swap it out for whatever skill you want to play. And it's easy breezy.
Yeah, so that goes back to a quote I talk about all the time in the book, never change the game, just change the content. And it's one of those that it's perfect for parents too, because once you teach that game, or like you said, create a little video showing how to play it, they never have to relearn. It's never so easy for little ones, because we don't have to reteach the rules and the rules and the rules.
Right.
And because it is those simple pieces, laminated cards or dice or counters, whatever it may be, or like you said, cereal they may have at home. It can be done in no time at all. And there's no grading for you. It's just fun for the kids to practice.
Can I also tell you, I have a game called Clean Sweep that has been on my computer since June.
Is this a new one?
I mean, I just have to put it out, but basically it's kind of the same idea, but it's in a circle pattern. So you put a marker on each spot. Before you play with a partner and you go around forward or back trying to collect as many pieces as you can. But when
they're taking them off,
they take them off, right? They try to collect as many pieces as you can. It's really fun if you do them with those erasers that you get at Target.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. You know what I love too is the easy thing.
Also, I recorded videos to show how to play each game. So those are like scan on a QR code. I know. Why don't I have this out? Because it's still on my computer.
No, but look at you. You're everything you just told teachers to do. You're doing it yourself. Yeah. That's good modeling, Dee Dee Wills. Good modeling.
Way to model. So anyhow, there's a QR code that people can scan. So they would be able to send that home as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. When I transitioned to doing stuff like that, that's what I started with, was sending home just paper games that either was something I created or something I had laying around the classroom. And then it turned into what you mentioned, Kim and I put together. We have this entire year long bundle, but there's also monthly packs that we call home play instead of homework. I put that little twist on it. I started doing it in my classroom. I think I put a video up and Kim reached out to me and she's like, "Hey, I want to make that with you." And I was like, "All right, let's do it." So we went through skills starting in August. And they build throughout the year, but same type of thing, the clip art and the content of the game and the skill of the game change, but but the way to play it never really does. In each of the months, we have 10 games. We have 5 ELA games and 5 math games. And then, like you said, with the videos, we put in direction pages for the parents. We also, because we didn't want this to be, like we said, we wanted to be home playing this at home. This isn't work that you have to complete any certain given day. Some kids would keep these at home for the week, you know, and they'd bring them back on Friday. But we also put a page in there for the parents that said something, I'm not going to remember off the top of my head, but it had a line for them to fill out, like, is there something your child did well with? Please tell us about it. Is there something your child struggled with? Do you have any questions about what your child was doing during this game or learning? So it was an awesome way that when we'd get those back, we didn't have to grade anything. It wasn't to enter scores, but on my own time, or what used to be called downtime in education, I don't think we have that anymore. I could look through and I could see, all right, this child struggled with this. Let's go back and send home this game. Or it also turned into an informal assessment almost, because then I could pull that child during centers and I could say, hey, let's play this game together. And I could see where they were making the mistakes or whatnot. Right. So those are 10 games for each month, themed around holidays or monthly themes that grow with the child as they go through the year. And all we would do was, Kim has a whole direction page about how to set these up, but they sat in my room, they were in a file folder crate and they were labeled each game. And I would go through and I made like 5 copies of each one just so multiple kids could take it home at a time.
Right.
They each had their own baggie, their own folder with all their parent sheets in it. And in their giant Ziploc, I would just drop in that game and I had kept a record of who had what game. And when it came back, I said, all right, go drop it in the folder, grab another one. And because they were all review of things we had done, I didn't have to worry about, you know, okay, you know, Grady needs to take this one home and I need to make sure that Dee Dee takes this one home because it's her level. They were all on level games just for review practice. There was no teaching at home. Did they challenge some of the kids? Sure. But that they were easy enough for them to figure out or the parent to figure out.
So what we know about when students engage in a game is that the amount of time spent on that skill goes up a lot. I was going to use a big word, but I'm not sure if I had enough caffeine yet to use it. So it goes up a lot.
A lot.
So we know that students will spend more time on tasks. They'll stay engaged in practice work that is a game, you know, for 15, 20 minutes. No problem. I mean, think about how long they'll play Uno. Think about how long they'll play all of those games, right? And their brain is activated versus how much longer, how much longer I have to go through this drill and kill exercise. So whenever you can swap out, you know, a drill and kill activity for a game-like activity, do it. Yeah. Whether it's in your classroom or sending home, your parents will thank you because they'll have students who say, my mom and dad sat down, or my mom and dad, or my sister and I, or my grandmother and I, or my babysitter and I sat down and played this game and we had a lot of fun.
The best thing too is, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
The best thing along with that too is to, and why I preach all the time, buying cheap things for your class, like that, not because they're cheap and broken, but is the kids are going to want to do this more, right? Like when you have these games out and they're prevalent in your classroom and you're playing these all the time, I cannot tell you the number of times kids said, can I take this home and play it? And because I didn't invest a ton of money, you know, it was either like you said, stuff you created on your own, or I bought some cheap board games. Every time they said, can I take this home and play it? I knew that they needed to take it home, right? Like that showed me that they didn't have these at home. And I was like, sure, let me put it in your, you know, so the home play bags that I was talking about didn't always have the home play activities that Kim and I created to sell and for teachers to use. Sometimes their home play bag was a box of Go Fish cards, right? Like, because we played it during stations and little Lyric said, can I take this home? I'm like, sure, go throw it in your home play bag. And because we had those bags ready to go, any game they took home just went in that bag and the parents sent it back whenever they were finished with it. So I think it's important to remember that we know the word equity came a lot with technology, right? Like during the pandemic. But there's a lot of equity issues as far as just kid things too, right? Like not all kids have games and not all kids have access to dice. So
and not all kids have parents that are available to play with them. So, you know, if they can have a sibling play with them as well, it's much, I mean, you just get so much more out of it than a sibling watching them, you know, recite their sight words or whatever.
Or fill in a worksheet for them.
Oh, I know, right? You're like, this strangely looks like, you know, so-and-so's handwriting. Your handwriting is so much better at home than it is at school. So those are just a couple of things. I was going to say one other thing. Oh, I was going to say that, you know, one, I think we talked about this before, but, you know, my parents probably are not going to get the award for this, but they would play blackjack with me. And that was how, I mean, you do so much addition with blackjack.
Yeah.
You know, and if I won, I got to eat dinner. And if I didn't, I'm kidding. I had great parents. But, you know, blackjack is one of those games that you can play that, you know, you are constantly doing addition. Yeah. And it's really great if it doesn't become a habit, right?
I can't wait till I visit you again. And I'm totally going to ask them if they can play blackjack with me.
I know my parents. The other one is cribbage, but that's an older game. And that's, you know, that one's tough too, but there's a lot of addition in that as well. So,
well, I think know, there's too, some games. It's one of those things that you had those parents that did that. And we do that all the time. Like when we're sitting around the dinner table, like we're playing euchre with our kids. We taught our kids how to play euchre, and it's become a family thing too, that every night when we sit down for dinner, the cards are on the table and we play. That sounded like I was going to start a country song or something. The cards are on the table. We play a game. And I think, you know, if you're a parent listening to this, that's also a teacher, that's something that I know it's a stress reliever for both of us too. You know, we're working on skills with our own two kids, but we're also just taking that time, carving out time. So I love it that you brought up blackjack. That's amazing.
Blackjack. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's, let's not pretend when I would sit down in Las Vegas and play blackjack, I'm still counting on my fingers, 'cause I don't want to be wrong. Right. But, you know, just there's some games in there that you know, you can sit down and play, and all of a sudden you turn and look at the clock and you've been there for a while doing it. And that's what we want to kind of mirror at home for children.
Well, and when you change the skill, like you said, with bump, when you talked about changing the skill or the content, not changing the game.
Yeah.
It never gets old, right? Like you can do these things over and over again. I have two little boys that I work with, the boys that are using Bottle right now. When we're working on ELA activities, we play board games and we read sentences and we read sight words and we read letter sounds. And we play the same game almost every time they come to see me, the same exact game. It's a version of Chutes and Ladders called Ramps and Rails. It's like a skateboarding game. And I have so many games, like this closet right here is full, ceiling to floor
of games,
but that's the one they keep going back to it. Like, do we get to play Ramps and Rails? I'm like, yeah, but today we're going to, you know, work on sight words. When you roll the dice before you move that spot, you read the sight word, you know? So
yeah.
When kids are having fun, like you said, there's something to be said about the amount of knowledge they grasp and their attention span and their engagement. But when they're having fun learning, the learning sticks too, and they just want to do it more.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So don't forget to grab games, things that you might have, things that you can find online. And
we'll put some links in
the notes. If you're going to send homework home. Yeah. We'll send links. If you're going to send homework home though, make sure that it's appropriate, but make it fun.
And meaningful.
Home play. I love that.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's it.
We did it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Classroom Collaborative Podcast.
If you are enjoying these episodes, please make sure that you subscribe wherever you are finding them.
And share and rate it so others can find it as well.
We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye.